Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed that I would recover. And I had to do the tedious, grinding work that, at the beginning, seemed so bleak and so far away from any sort of desirable future. But I knew one truth. If I did nothing, nothing would change. And at least I was going to give myself a chance at a desirable future. This podcast was created to help you make the choices that will propel you towards your desired future. So what are we waiting for? Let's get to this week's episode. Before introducing this week's guest, just want to give you a quick reminder that we've launched a new segment of the Unyielded podcast. The new segment is called Rise and Thrive. They come out on Mondays, they're super short, and they are intended to be fuel for you, your week, and your life. So please check them out, and I truly hope that they add value to your week and to your life. My guest today is a former corporate executive turned entrepreneur. She spent more than 25 years as a chief audit executive and chief risk officer assessing wellness in Fortune 500 companies. Then she reinvented herself, turning the lens from professional assessments to personal ones, helping her clients optimize their well-being, especially in times of transition. She is now a certified wellness coach, speaker, instructor, podcaster, and she is the founder of Athenas Wellness Enterprises, where she helps women holistically reinvent themselves at midlife. She is the author of The Athena Principles, Simple Wellness Practices for Overworked Professionals, and I highly recommend the book. She believes that a positive attitude is the accelerator that propels us through transformation. You can find her running the trails in northern New Jersey, where she completed her first marathon, an ultra marathon, at the age of 54. Her name is Kathy Robinson, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. So, Kathy, welcome to the show.
Bobby, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, well, and we were talking before we went live, you're surviving Henry, the hurricane.
Henri, yes, Hurricane Henri.
Henri, oh, see? Very nice. It makes it sound so much nicer that way. Oh, man. Ooh, so you have a very interesting story, and you know, I read part of it when I read your book, but I thought we'd get started by if you would just share with the listeners a little bit about your story and where you are.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. So right now I am the founder of Athena Wellness, and that's a company that helps people holistically reinvent themselves at midlife. And under that Athena Wellness umbrella, I get to do all the things that I love. I'm an author, a coach, I'm a podcaster, blogger, I do some online education, and I'm a speaker. But prior to that, I was 33 years in corporate, I started my career on Wall Street, and I was there for 18 years, worked for some of the best, of some of the top tier banks, and then completely burnt out, as one does when they have that kind of career. And then the last 15 years of my career, I was working for a Fortune 250 company. And half of that time was as its chief audit executive and chief risk officer.
Wow. That sounds stressful.
It was. And I think that's why I'm so happy every day that I get to go to work now. Like, I'm beside myself. Yeah. Quite a journey.
Wow. That is a huge shift from what you were doing into what you're doing now.
Without a doubt. And you know, there was something about turning 50. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I couldn't wait. Like, I was really embracing that birthday because it felt like it was, I had a chance to define not only what I wanted to do as a second act in my career, but also how did I want to live my life? I never asked myself, how do you want to spend your time? And 50 gave me permission to do that. And so it really took a number of years, but the answer, interestingly enough, was on my bookshelves or in my Kindle. I used to travel a lot for work.
Yep.
And I looked at, well, what do you like to do in your, I didn't have a whole lot of spare time, but I did read a lot when I was on the planes. And it was all about healthy eating and endurance sports and, you know, creativity too, like writing. And there was a bunch of spirituality stuff and being in nature and meditation. And I'm like, wow, the connective tissue really is wellness and what I was calling living a good life. And so a couple of Google searches, I'm like, wow, I could actually become a wellness coach. Let me look into this. And so while I was working, I became a certified coach. I hired a digital marketing coach to get Athena Wellness Enterprises up and running. I started blogging and I wrote a book. And then I called it quits at 55. I retired. Wow. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. And midlife is, you know, I heard you say that, you know, at midlife. What attracted you to kind of, because it seems like that's kind of your focus a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What attracted you to the midlife part of it?
I wished I had a little more guidance. And I felt that coming through this, I might be able to provide that. So even leaving, now I made a managed decision to leave corporate. Mm-hmm. Even when I got into the entrepreneurial life, I was still, even though this was my decision, it was like, wow, this is different. There is an internal shift that I was experiencing that I wasn't expecting. And it's almost like I spent 33 years under this structure called corporate, and I was executing. I knew how to work that like nobody's business, right? And suddenly that's not there. And it wasn't that my identity was tied to it, but my life was structured around it. Mm-hmm. And it really took some time to kind of step back and be like, oh, like I don't have to get up at 4 a.m. anymore. I was doing that. Like I did not miss a beat. My last day of work, I took one day and then I was into Athena Wellness, just like I was going to, just like my corporate job. And even though I still work probably just as many hours, I found a way to be much more flexible and much kinder to myself as I'm taking this journey now. But that wasn't readily apparent to me that there was really going to be a shift from my corporate mindset to this post-corporate mindset.
Yeah. Well, think about it. All your habits.
Yes.
Were, you know, I remember this was a long time ago, 20 some years ago when I started my business. It was like, I was always so effective in my job and I'm a very disciplined person, but so much of that is tied to your habits.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, well, now I have to create new habits. Okay. So sometimes people will say midlife, you know, 50, 50. I don't know if it irritates you. Let me just come out and ask it this way.
Yeah.
I hear people who are our age, because we're roughly the same age, I think. I'm mid 50s. And they're like, oh, you know, my life was over when I turned 40. You know, it's really over when I turned 50. I'm like, no, to me, it's like, it's just beginning. How, what do you feel?
Oh yeah. Well, that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because I feel better and I feel physically better in my mid 50s than I did in my mid 30s. And yeah. I wanted to write that story because people think that wellness, oh, you have to have all this time and you have to, like, those were my busiest years, you know, between mid 30s and by the time I retired, you can still have practices that support you. It's not an either or. And sometimes we think that, but yeah, I tell people my age, I'm 57. I'm so proud. I go into CrossFit. It's like, come on, kids, let's do this. I love it.
Let's go. And you've mentioned the endurance sport. So give us a taste of some of this. I was going to say craziness. Yeah. Enthusiastic endurance stuff.
So it started with running. So when I was getting back into shape, it was a mix of weightlifting and cardio. And in my mid-30s, just to put this in context, I could not run more than one lap on a treadmill. And that was fact. I did not have the endurance. And then I continued with it, you know, a few miles at a time. 3 miles was pretty much my cutoff in the early days, 20 minutes, you know, and I kind of built up from there. In my 40s, I was starting to get into longer distances, and then everything just started to ache. You know, your knees start to ache, and it's like, you know what? I don't know if this is really the right thing for me to be doing. At work, though, we had a challenge. I was probably about 52, and the challenge was my boss, who was the CFO of the company, said, hey, why don't we do this? Riding our bikes from Boston to New York City. So it's 275 miles. Now, I haven't been on a bike in 20 years.
That's a long way. Oh,
me and you, sure. Yeah, we'll do that. And by the next day, it was like, okay, you're going to lead the team. And before I knew it, the CEO was part of the team. Now I can't fail, right? So there's 150 people from my company. I'm the ringleader. I'm like, oh my God, I have to learn how to ride a bike and do this for long periods of time. So it was about 18 months and I did it really, I was stealth. Like I would go out to Montauk and I had to prove to myself that I could do 3 centuries back to back. And that's what I was training for. It took about a year to get to that point. And I did it a few months out and then we did that bike ride. And when it came around the next time and he was like, you know, let's do it again. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to train for an ultra marathon. I wanted an exit. And then, so I committed to an ultra marathon and I had not run more than 17 miles at that point. I had 5 months to be able to do this, to be able to train for this. And I really got into it. Now it was a time when my mom had just passed. I was going through a relationship breakout. So to be out on the trails for 4 hours at a time sounds like misery for many. And it was just like, oh, nobody can get me here.
Yeah.
I was out there. So there was a real emotional healing part of that, you know, got me on the trails, but I did do it. You're not supposed to, but I ran my first marathon on a bike trail just to see how I felt about 7 weeks before the ultra. And then I did a 50K and that was 2018. And then once I did that and I retired, I'm like, there's nothing to run away from anymore. So I haven't felt that need to get back out there. I still do CrossFit. I still run 3-5 miles a couple times a week. But those ultra endurance, I think, really played a part at a particular point in time for me.
Yeah, man, it does give you running always. It gives you that. I think cross country skiing's a lot like that, which is why I like it. When you're out there in nature, it's just you and it's nature and it's the sounds and you just get in that rhythm and it's like, it's heaven.
It's bliss.
Yes. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Now you said back into shape. Were you out of shape? Like when you say in your mid-30s?
Yeah. So that was really my first wellness turning point. I was working for a bank in New York and we used to wear suits back in the day.
Oh yeah.
The tip of my pump got caught in my trench coat and I went down Rockefeller Plaza, you know, right by the skating rink that you see. I went down hard on the steps and I was like 35, something like that. And other than a bruised shin and a bruised ego, it really shook me up because I was a runner in high school. And then I partied in all fairness, for about 15 years. But in that wake, gained 25 pounds. And the fact that my balance and my reflexes weren't what they were really shook me up. I felt like an old lady at 35 in that moment that I couldn't catch myself. Yeah. And so I had to take a really hard look. And that's when I bought the treadmill. I put it next to my bed. I bought a weight bench and I put it next to the treadmill. And that was my routine. I found a weightlifting routine. I found a cardio routine. And it was miserable saying, this is all you can do. Like, this is all you can lift. And this is all you can run. And so it was like, walk a minute, walk a little faster, jog, walk, and do that for 20 minutes. And that's how it started 20-something years ago. Yeah.
But you know what it gets to? We just have to start somewhere. We have to start where we are and work our way forward.
Exactly.
You know, I heard someone say it this way. We often judge, like we see someone else and we're like, oh, well, I'm not as good as they are. And it's like, yeah, but we're on chapter one. They're on chapter 101.
Right.
We can't be. So Kathy, when you had that catalyst moment where it's like, okay, I'm going to make a change. What were some of the things that you did to create the habit around working out?
Yeah. So I made it unavoidable, right? So a few things. And that literally, I mean, who wants a treadmill and a weight bench in their bedroom? Nobody. And I did that on purpose because it's like, okay, you've got to do this. And I was commuting into the city. So this had to happen at like 5 a.m. to be able to get, you know, get showered and get going. And I talk about this in one of the principles, like this idea of intention. It really hit me emotionally. There was an emotional why there. You know, it wasn't just, oh, I want to look better. I want to fit in my clothes better. It was, there is no way I'm going to live my life. Like, if this is where it's heading, I don't like the way this looks. So there was a real deep purpose for me doing this. And so that's what got me out of bed. And that's what got me on that treadmill. Yeah. And once you get over that feeling of, okay, it also brings acceptance of this is where you are. You know, I used to run cross country in high school. It's like, you're not that person anymore. But let's see. Now, I never in a million years ever thought that I would run a marathon.
Yeah.
It's not in the cards. This was really just about health. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you, and that's exactly the point that you're making. Like when you start with 20 minutes and you do it consistently, God, it changes everything. And the more my body changed, because the weightlifting helped to change the shape of my body, I was feeling better from an endurance perspective, what that does for your confidence. And then everything starts to change around that. And that's how the momentum starts to build.
Yeah. I love that. And what you're talking about there, it reminds me of the importance of our identity when we're trying to make a change. Because yeah. What I'm hearing you say, it wasn't like, oh, I want to lose weight because I'm going to a wedding, right? Yeah. It was, wait a minute, this is not who I am.
Right.
You know, and I think when we tie it back to our identity, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was thinking about is the breakthroughs. Like, so you started with the 20 minutes. And then what was your first breakthrough after that?
Well, what's interesting is, and I continued with the working out because I felt great. And that hasn't stopped, right? So there really hasn't been a break in 20 something years. So that is table stakes. Like nothing's gonna shake that. But what I found was I had two other wellness realizations like that, and each one got deeper. Right. So the first one was around physical body. It was around nutrition. It was around exercise. That's where most people start. The second one was I was working for Morgan Stanley. Seemed like I had it all, right? I had everything that you would want to have. I was in the middle. I took vacation, which was unusual at Morgan, but I took vacation and I was in the middle of the Alaskan wilderness. And I finally realized you are completely burnt out. And not only that, you have compartmentalized your emotional life and your creative life. Like something has to change here. It was one of those things. So I call that is more to me, more of that flow, more of that mental, that purpose. And within 3 months of returning, it's funny how when you have a realization, things fall into place, an old boss called, and suddenly I'm out of Wall Street and I'm at this new company within 3 months. And that wasn't the plan when I went to Alaska, but that's how it all turned out, right? So
yeah,
their life changed, right? Because the job changed and the quality of life changed. The third one, more spiritual, I went to my mid-40s now. I'm feeling good. I have time now, right? So I've healed physically. I've healed mentally. I decide to go on my first writing retreat and I'm across the country in a completely different, it had nothing to do with my corporate life. I was completely out of my element. It was very obvious to the other people there that had nothing to do with writing. It was just more of that more organic kind of living that I was just like, where am I? I was in the Pacific Northwest, right? And that setting though, because I was so out of my element and it was so capably held that space, I had one of the most profound experiences of my life. That gave me a glimpse into what I really wanted my life to be, why I was here, like what that life should be, and how far away I was from that. Hmm. And so that was one of them. I'm getting chills just saying that, but that was one of those experiences where there's such clarity. And I remember going up to the instructor, like, I can't go back to New Jersey like this. Like everything had shifted, but nothing shifted. My body didn't change. My job didn't change, but everything about me was rejiggered. And I got back to it and they were like, how was your vacation? No, it was just fine. But that, if I didn't have that experience, I wouldn't be with you here today. I would still be working in corporate.
Wow. Have you pinpointed what it was?
It was connecting with what I call the still point and listening. I mean, it came through so loud and clear of, and it was a very emotional thing too, because it's like everything kind of got cleared out of the way and I'm listening and I can actually see like, this is the life you want to live. Like, and that was about 10 years before I retired. So it didn't happen overnight, but that really started the journey of being very mindful with this, how I was spending my time, what I was doing, what I was learning, what I wanted to get at, how I was contributing. And it was the difference between showing up to doing a job and how do you prepare yourself to be in a job where you're to be of service. It's a very different place in your heart, a very different place in your mind. And that's not something that happens overnight. It was something I really had to grow into.
Yeah. That's awesome though. And when you say the still point, I mean, I have an idea what you mean, but tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. You know, the whole reason why I named the company Athena is Athena had both the strength and the wisdom. And so the idea of Athena Wellness is to be able to have practices that are able to quiet you to the point where you can hear your own wisdom and to know you have the strength to be able to make those changes. But I had to go through that process first. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was my way of experiencing that what that transformation can bring to a life. So I can try to articulate it and try to, I mean, the book is really about kind of codifying that. How do you make that so someone else can step through these processes? It would be different for them. You know, for people who read, it's completely different experiences, but it's this idea that there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing you need to fix, but there's this evolution and only you know the answer. How do you get quiet enough to be able to hear that? Some people meditate, some people journal, some people do cross-country skiing in nature. Some people run the trails in nature. That was, you know, those are all portals. These are all ways in. And whatever it is that works for you can get you to that place where you can really hear what is it that's really critical and important for you? Because you're not going to find it in a, you know, take these five steps. That's not going to work. Yeah.
Mm-mm. No, we need that margin, that white space. Yes. And I like the still point, quiet enough to hear it. Because I think a lot of times we're not quiet enough to hear it. You know, sometimes we get caught up in the busyness, the distractions. And speaking of the book, because I read it, there were a few things from the book I wanted to explore. And one of them, it was one of the things I highlighted, one of the first things I think, and it was that the antidote to exhaustion is not necessarily rest. You said, and then you went on to say the antidote to exhaustion is wholeheartedness. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah. So while I was in this, I just turned 50, you know, the world's my oyster kind of feeling. I had the privilege to hear the poet David White speak. Mm. He's amazing. And it was the first time I saw him. And he was recalling a story back in the days before he became a full-time poet. He was working for a nonprofit organization and he was experiencing high levels of stress, which I could identify with, and exhaustion. And a friend of his came over, a monk. They were sharing a bottle of wine and he said, "Brother David, please tell me about exhaustion." He was just at his wit's end. And it was the friend that replied, "You know, the antidote to exhaustion is not necessarily rest," which is what David thought he was going to hear. The antidote to exhaustion is wholeheartedness. The reason why you're so exhausted is because you can't be wholehearted with what you're doing. You're here to have a conversation with life in poetry, and that's not where you're dedicating your life. And I sat in that audience Like, this is the first time I've heard it in that way. Like, that's the way, that disconnect is what I was feeling. That's what was burning me out. Mm. So wholehearted for me is when you show up sincerely, you've got commitment, but there's, for me, an enthusiastic and uplifting quality to it. You know, that uplifting energy, to me, that's what wholeheartedness is. And the absence of that can show up with feeling off track or being burnt out or not fully engaged, being separated from your true nature might be a good way to describe it. And when that separation happens, that disassociation, that is what leads to unhealthy habits, right? Mm-hmm. We want to numb that because it's uncomfortable. When you're feeling that and you can't articulate it and you feel a little uncomfortable, what do? You're going to numb it with, you know, the corporate treadmill is a drug. Constant motion is a numbing agent, along with the things that you would normally, you know, the alcohol, the food, the social media, you know, raise your hand, perfectionism, you know, that was one of my favorites back in the day, overachievement. So this living wholeheartedly became a wellness practice for me. Like, how can I start to tap into that? You don't have to do it full time. He was able to quit at some point, become a poet. I knew I wasn't going to quit and become a poet, at least not then. So how do you start to incorporate these small, how do you start to reclaim your life in a way that you can incorporate it, not have to make a wholehearted change, but still feel more wholehearted? Yeah. That was the practice. And I feel like it's more of a remembering who you are. For me, it was a stripping away of these, you know, this persona that I built up all of these years and getting to my essence, to that core, and practicing how to live from there. In fact, it's funny, I just made this connection now that we're talking. When I had that experience at that writing retreat, the instructor or the facilitator, when I was telling her the experience, she's like, try to live from that soft place that you feel, try coming from there, whether it's in your personal life, like it doesn't have to be all the time, or when you're writing, try to find a way to open up that place. And it's really through trial and error, but it is possible to start to incorporate that and not have to, you know, become a monk or become a poet.
Thank goodness.
Thankfully, right? Yes.
You know,
although there's nothing wrong with becoming either.
That's right. That's right. It's just maybe not for everybody. We're not all suited to it. Okay. So I have to ask you this because I was watching you as you were telling that. When you were in the audience and you were listening to David, that's the poet, right?
Yes.
And you were listening to him and he said that. Did it feel like, oh my goodness, he's talking right to me?
It wasn't so much to me. It was he identified something I have been unable to put words to. And it wasn't for the lack of trying.
Yeah.
You know, what was that? Like I could feel and I was making changes, but sometimes we need that. We either need somebody to reflect back to us or mm-hmm. we need hindsight. And I probably wasn't too far away from it at that point. I was still in it. But when he said that, it was, and what a relief to know that we can take small steps and just like we did with our physical health, right? You could take small steps there. You can take small steps to do the things like you hear all the time. Oh, do the things that bring you joy. Well, why? Because they light you up in a way that brings an energy to these other things. And you start to gather momentum. You know, you start to build this new inner life and it becomes incredibly vibrant. And then suddenly one day it starts to take over.
Yeah. It gets its own momentum.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Great. I like that. Something else you wrote, and I don't know if I've read it this way before, but you said wellness is not just about the physical and emotional change. It is a form of self-respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Self-respect is really about how you treat yourself, right? And how you allow others to treat you. It starts with taking responsibility for the first part, though, in how you treat yourself. And as we all know, it's easy to put ourselves in the rear view, right?
Yeah.
So to treat yourself well and to be well, your behaviors and your actions need to align with people who treat themselves in a good way. And it's a learning experience. And a lot of times it involves saying no to what's commonly accepted. So going back to the ultra, you know, to be able to do back-to-back-to-back bike rides or runs, those involved conversations and trying to build support and trying to help people understand what it means to make a commitment like this and why it was important. I recently interviewed somebody on my podcast and they said, a good way to explain this is I'm doing this for us, right? So I'm doing this because it helps me be a better partner, be a better employee, be a better daughter, be a better parent for you. Wow. That's where I was trying to get to. So when I think of wellness, just to be clear, I'm thinking that of the choices that we make and the actions we take to create this lifestyle. It's an ongoing journey, right? But well-being is the experience of all of these positive actions that we're taking. It's how we feel as a result of these choices and these actions. So self-respect to me is a byproduct. When you honor yourself by embracing wellness as a vital and ongoing process in your life, those choices help you to create a healthy and integrated and fulfilling life for yourself and for the others in your life.
Yeah. As you were talking there, it reminded me of when you do the things that show you respect yourself, it increases your self-respect. You know, this was years ago. And my mom was a wonderful person, and she also could be a little abusive at times, you know. And she was, even into my 30s, like she would call and leave these messages for me. I'll never forget, Rick and I would just started dating, and we came home. This was an answering machine, not voicemails, right? So we come back from having dinner, and I hit the button because I'm like, oh, I've got a message. I want to make sure everybody's okay. And it was my mom, and it was a scathing, scathing voicemail. And I remember Rick just standing there, and he was like with this puzzled look, looking at the answering machine. Like, he's like, is that your mom? I'm like, yeah, that is. And at one point, Kathy, I thought, okay, I have to stand up to her and I have to draw really clear boundaries and say, I love you. I want to have a great relationship, and you can't cross this boundary because this is not okay. I mean, And I remember saying to my coach at the time, I said, I can't respect myself if I allow her to treat me that way. And for some reason, what you're saying there, it was kind of that same connection. Like, if I respect myself, am I taking care of myself? And then I think when people talk about self-care, it says, oh, you're going to the spa, you know, which it might be. I think self-care is way bigger than that. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. And, you know, I think it, a lot of this, and this came to me later in life, like the last couple of years, but this idea of self-compassion, of giving yourself what you need, like you don't need to wait for somebody else to do it. You can give that to yourself. So the example I like to use is when I was at my busiest at corporate, you know, training for all this stuff, I had global responsibilities. My parents were aging and my mom was ill. In the mornings, the alarm would go off at 4 and I would set it for 5 minutes, lay back down, put my hand over my heart and to myself say, for the next 5 minutes, there's nothing you need to do and you don't have to make any decisions. Nobody needs you. Nobody needs anything for you for the next 5 minutes. That space, like I looked forward to those 5 minutes, like I can't tell you, but those 5 minutes then, as I experienced that over time, I wanted that space to grow. And I found that I was doing, and I think that's what led to some of these more long distance things and saying yes to some of these and giving myself that time. Started with 5 minutes in the morning of there's no decision you need to make. Nobody needs you. Just enjoy this space. And 5 minutes, the alarm would go off and I never wanted it to end, but then the day would start, but it led to wanting more of that feeling while still taking care of my responsibilities and doing what I needed to do. But how do you find those little pockets? And to me, that's a self-compassion practice.
Yeah.
And it goes a long way. Something that I learned really recently, and it was really emotional, the ability, this idea of giving yourself what you need, bringing to mind an event, kind of like what you just described with your mom. So nothing that's crazy triggering, but something that where you're feeling like you're missing the mark. What I brought to mind was once my mom passed, you know, my dad's in his late 90s and always not feeling like I can do enough, spend enough time, do enough. It was that feeling of not enoughness. And so I'm in this, you know, mindful self-compassion group. And the exercise that we did, you know, you put your hand over your heart or wherever, whether you're touching your cheek or holding your own hand or, you know, a hand on your heart and giving yourself, bringing that experience to mind. And what would you have want to have heard from somebody else while you were experiencing that? And for me, it was, you're doing a good job. You know, you're doing the best you can. And we're all quiet in this. But it's so emotional to even hear that. I had never, ever said those words to myself. I was like 54 at the time. Like, you're doing everything you can. You're doing a good job. It's incredibly healing. And you walk out of that, like, comes back to that, you know, that still point. I actually have the tools that I need to be able to give myself that. I don't need to hear that from somebody else. It's incredibly not only powerful, but it's empowering, you know, to know that you can do that at any time. You can give yourself those 5 minutes. You can give yourself the words you need to hear anytime.
Yeah. Anytime. Oh man. So that triggered, this is why I love doing those interviews, because it always triggers these thoughts, you know, and I always feel bad for my guests because I'm like, oh, let's go here.
No,
when I was recovering from when I was sick, I got acupuncture and I hate needles, right? Hate needles. But at one point my doctor said to me, you know, because we had some rough times when I was a kid, I always defended my sister. Like, I always wanted to stick up for her. I always wanted to protect her. And I didn't always do that great of a job protecting myself. Mm-hmm. And my doctor said to me, she's like, as you're sitting here, you know, lying here for the next 20 minutes, you know, the needle sticking out of you, she said, I wonder, could you go back and talk to your former self and tell her the words that would be helpful for her to hear? And Kathy, it was very similar to what you're just describing. Yeah. Like, you're doing the best you can. And afterwards, it was emotional. I mean, and I was crying. I couldn't move my hands because I had the needles and everything. And I was talking to her about it. I'm like, Dr. Barb, what's this? And she's like, you can go back. You can revisit those old hurts and you can give yourself the compassion that you couldn't do then. Mm-hmm. And it's healing. And at first it's like, that sounds so strange, but I think it's really true.
Yeah.
I mean, so self-compassion I know is big. That's one of your five principles, right? If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
So that's one. And so do you want to talk about the other four?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So the principles are, the first one is self-compassion, which we talked about. And to me, I define that as the care for your own well-being in terms of self-acceptance and nurturing support. So exactly what we've just been talking about.
The care of your own well-being. Is that how you put it?
The care for your own well-being in the form of self-respect. I'm back on the self-respect thing. Self-acceptance and nurturing support.
Nice.
And the second is intention. And as I mentioned, that's the heart-based why. Why do we want to transform? It's, as you rightly mentioned, it's not about fitting into the outfit, right? It's what's behind that. That's what gets you going. Helps you set your aim, set direction, and then connect emotionally to those changes. The third is consistency. And that's the way you choose to show up for yourself. I think that's probably where the self-respect comes in, right? How are you showing up for yourself? How are you staying committed and engaged, especially during challenging times? If you can show up for yourself, that's a game changer. Consistency sounds like it's one of those words nobody wants to deal with, but that's really the secret sauce, right? Showing up. The fourth is growth mindset. And that's the lens that you choose to view, in the case of the book, the wellness journey, but it could be any journey, to determine your level of progress and enjoyment. How are you going to show? So you're showing up consistently. How? You know, is there this level of optimism? Because that to me it's an accelerator, right? That's what builds the habits, right? When you're able to have that view of, I'm doing this for myself, I'm doing this for us, that conversation that we had. So that's growth mindset. And the last is accountability. And not only is that a way of checking in, but celebrating the wins really big, and then compassionately adjusting where needed. Yeah. You know, we don't get it perfect. And the beautiful thing about accountability, people think, well, I've got I need a spreadsheet, I need a Fitbit, you know, we really just need, for me, it's Sunday nights. I plan for the week ahead. I take a look back. If something didn't work, I adjust it. It's not a heavy thing. But again, it's the consistency of doing that that gets us. And also too, we can have accountability partners and groups and ways of making it more fun, like the ride from Boston to New York was with 150 of my closest colleagues. You know, you can do it. You have that accountability in all kinds of ways. It doesn't have to be, you know, on your own.
Yeah. And I think with the accountability piece, you mentioned something really important. And maybe this is just hitting for me more because of several coaching experiences I've had recently, where I think high performers are kind of relentless. And, you know, I can raise my hand on being relentless. And it's very easy sometimes where we hit a milestone or we cross a finish line and we take no time to celebrate it. We just move the goalpost back. And that's why I think celebrating those wins, I think it's huge, but we skip it.
We do. And I have to tell you, just recently, because this came up and I realized this is not one of my strong points either. And so I have a weekly sheet that I've created on, you know, Word doc, but at the bottom, it says what to celebrate. And so if I have to fill that out, I know I'll do it. And so that was just my way to remind myself on a weekly basis, what did you celebrate from last week? Or what do you have to look forward to this week? And let's record that down as you would if you had to adjust because there was a challenge or an obstacle of some sort.
Yeah.
Same thing for wins. Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you celebrate? What are some of those, you know, things?
Yeah. So if there's a milestone in the business, whether it's books or whether it's podcasts, sometimes it's conversations. Like I find when I have a really deep conversation during a podcast or if there's a big client breakthrough of some sort, I'm finding when I first started the business, it was all about those external milestones. And now it's gotten much deeper of I get a lot of joy out of the work that I do. And so I try to find those things. And just like David was able to give voice to, you know, what I was feeling in corporate, I try to give voice to these things that these breakthroughs that we're seeing in other folks. And we're much better in doing that, but it is part of my work and it does make a big difference to me. So, yeah. And sometimes it might be something physical that I do. If I do something in the gym that I'm happy about, or it could be anything. And that's the beautiful thing about it, right? Like, why not? In fact, as we get older, like the more things I can celebrate, let's do it.
The better.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and another thing is too, I think sometimes it can be just actions that we took, right? You know, when I was starting the podcast, I was like, oh, no one's going to want to be a guest on this thing. Right. So, and I don't control who says yes.
Right.
But if every week I thought, I think I had a goal for myself, I was going to reach out to 3 people every week. Sometimes, you know, and you know this, sometimes you don't hear back right away. Mm-hmm. But if I did what I was supposed to do, mm-hmm. I could celebrate that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
I think we miss that. I really do. Okay. So quickly, one other thing I wanted to talk about from the book before I forget, you made a point in there, the difference between goals and intention.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, you know, we don't make that distinction. So I just wanted your take on that.
Yeah. And I think this was me talking to myself, right? this corporate versus post-corporate, right? But I actually had implemented this while I was still working in corporate. But to me, a goal is, this is something where it's an end, right? That we're directing our effort. It's future oriented. It's focused on achievement. It's something that has to do with a later date in our outer world. That's the way I think about it. Okay. Now let me get the flip side of that, which is intention. Intention is more of a determination or a resolve to act in a particular way. So we went from effort to how we're going to act. Intentions are rooted in the present, things that I'm intending to do this. I'm making that intention now. I can do that now. And it also is focused in living in alignment with our beliefs and values, right? So that difference between how I was showing up on the treadmill, right? It was something that was aligned to me internally, but it reflects how we feel and our inner world. So one is very outward facing and one is inward facing. So the reasons we talk about why do New Year's resolutions fail? In my mind, they're usually goal driven. Right? We're focusing on results. We're focusing on external rewards. There's nothing wrong with that. That worked for me for a long, long time. It helped me get things done, but they're not often aligned with a strong internal desire. It's a should. I should lose weight. I should get more organized. I should do this. I should do that. And that mindset of add to that, it's either succeeding or failing. And if I don't do this, I'm going to fail. I mean, these things get really, really heavy. I think intentions are more forgiving and coming back to self-compassion. They honor the effort that we do. So we can celebrate the intention that we make. I'm intending to reach out to three people. I did reach out to three people. Doesn't matter the outer world, whether they said yes or no. I did what I intended to do. Yay. Right. So it gives us, it helps us see what the why behind the desire change is. Why do I really want to do this? So, you know, a goal for New Year's, I want to lose weight to fit into a pair of jeans. An intention for New Year's, I really want more energy because I want to be able to play with my grandkids, or I want to walk my dog, or I just want to be able to spend more quality time with my partner. That gets you out of bed at 5 a.m. where, you know, the jeans that I don't fit in, I haven't fit into them in 3, it could wait, right? It's able to put that off. But that internal emotion, because you know how you'll feel if you don't do it. And it's not out of success fail. It's out of disappointing yourself because this is something you really want. I think that's the difference.
Yeah. And that does get back to the self-respect and the compassion and all that stuff. So the book was great. Do you want to speak a little bit about the book, what it's called, where people can find it, that type of thing?
Sure. It's called The Athena Principles, Simple Wellness Practices for Overworked Professionals. As I said, I wrote it because I wanted to share this methodology of how you really can feel better at midlife. And people in their 20s read it, people in their 30s, male, female. I thought it was going to be women at midlife, but it turns out it's a little bit broader than that. But it's a methodology that includes tools, principles, and practices. The tools include things like a holistic wellness spectrum, which gets to what we were talking before of all the different ways you can get in. It doesn't have to be nutrition or exercise. There are tons of ways that we can set wellness intentions. And that's what that spectrum shows. The 5 principles we already talked about. And then there are related practices for each of them. There's a writing, a meditation, and a positive action for each one of these principles. They were developed to be accessible to non-writers and non-meditators alike, as well as those that are more familiar with those practices.
Nice. And one of the things you said in the book too, and I think this is important, it's not a book just for people who want to train to be an ultra marathon endurance sports. It's really for everyone. And you also mentioned your podcast. Want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's the Athena Wellness Podcast. I actually never intended to start a podcast, but I released the book at the height of the pandemic last year. It came out last May, and I could not go on a book tour. And so I went on a podcast tour, and I found that I really like this. And so my goal for this year, it started up in December, and I've been loving it. So it's the Athena Wellness Podcast, and wherever you find your favorite podcast, it'll be there.
Yeah. I love the way that you prepare for yours and, you know, what you bring. So I hope that the listeners check that out. And then finally, if people are interested in learning more about you or they want to contact you because they're, you know, they could use your help, how can they reach out?
Yeah, very easy. It's www.athenawellness.com. If you type in /action plan, you can get an overview of the book. It includes the wellness spectrum, the principles, and an action plan that people can fill out. By all means, please. I'd love to hear from any of your listeners. That'd be wonderful.
Awesome. Well, Kathy, I appreciate you being here, sharing this, you know, going with my rabbit holes as they came up.
Love it.
That's kind of my style, but I just really appreciate it. And I loved your book too. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I had a ball and I love going down rabbit holes. So it was perfect. Thank you so much, Bobby. I really appreciate it.
You bet. I hope that you found inspiration from Kathy's story, as well as practical ideas to move you forward. Here are my 3 insights. Number 1, our identity drives change. When Kathy fell on those steps at Rockefeller Center, something clicked inside that said, this is not who I am. When we connect at an identity level with something, change happens because it creates a pull. It creates a tug in a positive direction. At a point, once we start taking the actions that align with that identity, we create a positive upward spiral. And that creates its own momentum for us. And that's how suddenly it looks like we're having these big breakthroughs. And yet it was all these small actions in the making. Number 2, I loved how Kathy talked about the still point and listening to it. As she said, we have to get quiet enough to hear it. We have to get quiet enough to tune into our inner wisdom. If you've listened to this show at all, you know how much I love cross-country skiing and road cycling. And I love them for a number of reasons, but part of what I love about both of them is that they help me find that still, quiet point for myself. I'm in nature. I do not listen to music or podcasts or anything because I want to tune into the sounds, the sound of the wind, of the birds. Occasionally, if I'm lucky enough, I get to hear the elk bugling as I'm biking. But it's also the sound of my skis on the snow, at the crunch, or the sound of my tires on the pavement. And by doing that, I really get to tune into my own breathing and my own being. And what I've found is there are a lot of answers in that stillness. And number three, the antidote to exhaustion is not necessarily rest. The antidote to exhaustion is wholeheartedness. I think a lot of times we think that when we are burnt out or we're exhausted or whatever, we only need rest and maybe to binge watch some stuff on Netflix or whatever. And there are times when we absolutely need to do that. We need to rest. We need to nourish our body. But maybe there are also times that what we really need, because what we're missing, is bringing our wholeheartedness to life. If you have ever found any value in listening to this podcast, and if you'd like to help us grow organically, I'd like to ask you a big favor. Would you please go to Apple and leave us a review and a rating? This one action helps us tremendously, as it's how Apple decides which shows to recommend. And today, I'll leave you with this challenge. How can you create a still point for yourself so that you can tune into your inner wisdom?